Oh yay, oh yay, oh yay. All persons having business before the Honorable, the United States Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia Circuit are admonished to draw near and give their attention, for the court is now sitting. God save the United States and His Honorable Court. Be seated, please. Case number 07-3077, United States of America versus Maribel A. Guillen, Appellant. Mr. Axum for the Appellant, Mr. Strand for the Appellee.
May it please the court, counsel. Tony Axum representing the appellant Maribel Guillen. I'd like to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal. Ms. Guillen challenges on appeal the district court's presumptive use of the guidelines in arriving at her sentence, and therefore seeks remand for resentencing. Although the plea agreement contained a provision limiting Ms. Guillen's right to appeal, Ms. Guillen did not knowingly and intelligently waive that right in accordance with Rule 11. During the plea colloquy, the district court said, and I quote, "One thing I want to explain to you is that you would always have the right to take an appeal if you thought my sentence was illegal, and that's very important." And later during the plea colloquy, the district court, referring to the plea agreement itself and the actual waiver itself, said, "All right, I told you a while ago that you would always have the right to appeal if you thought my sentence was illegal. If I gave you more than 20 years, which is the maximum under the statute, that of course would be illegal, and your attorney would always have the right to take appeal if I go above the guideline range." Thus, Ms. Guillen understood from the district court that she could appeal any illegal sentence, including but not limited to a sentence above the statutory maximum or a sentence above the guideline range. And the district court's statement to Ms. Guillen actually suggested that a sentence within the guideline range would automatically be legal. And I'll discuss that more as the second issue or the primary issue under which Ms. Guillen challenges the sentence she received in this case. I'd also note that when the district court told Ms. Guillen, made these statements to Ms. Guillen, the government did not object or correct the court, although the government now says that Ms. Guillen waived her right to pursue this appeal. The district court's language to Ms. Guillen and Ms. Guillen's understanding of that language is very clear from the record. And for that reason, Ms. Guillen did not knowingly and intelligently.
But at the end of the plea colloquy, the district court made it pretty clear what was going on here. She says the defendant was giving up her right to appeal any sentence she receives unless I sentence her to a period longer than 20 years, or unless I depart upward. So it was made very clear at the end of the colloquy what the terms of the plea were, the waiver.
I would respectfully disagree that at that point it was made clear. Mm-hmm. The district court did address counsel for Ms. Guillen and say something about the paragraph, I believe it's paragraph 13, containing the waiver to appeal, and she asked Mr. Venegas whether he understood that Ms. Guillen was waiving her rights, her appellate rights, with the exception of a right to appeal a sentence greater than 20 years or a sentence above the calculated guideline range. But she then asked Ms. Guillen whether Ms. Guillen thought she understood. Ms. Guillen said yes, but the court then provided a further explanation. And so the conclusion for Ms. Guillen is really the further explanation that the court provides. And in that further explanation, the court did not say these are exclusive grounds on which you can appeal. Rather, the court suggested that these were examples of grounds on which you can appeal, beginning the explanation with, "I have already told you that you have the right to appeal any illegal sentence." A sentence that doesn't follow the procedure laid out in Rita and Gall would be an illegal sentence. And after the court provided that explanation to Ms. Guillen, the court did not thereafter ask Ms. Guillen whether she understood. So the record does not establish that Ms. Guillen understood or knew, or actually the extent to which the court understood the waiver provision in the plea agreement.
She did say, do you have any questions you want to ask me about it?
That's correct, but for
a sentence after the explanation.
That's correct, but Ms. Guillen, being untrained in the law, would not necessarily know that the court had articulated an inconsistency with the plea agreement. As far as Ms. Guillen, the defendant standing before the court, understands, the district court reads a provision, then explains that provision to her. If she believes she understands it, there wouldn't be a reason for Ms. Guillen to ask the court a question.
You quoted, I guess you were quoting from 68 of the appendix, right, where the court says, I told you a while ago I could never give you, that you would always have the right to take an appeal if you thought my sentence was illegal. If I gave you more than 20 years, which is the maximum, in addition, if I go above the guideline range.
That's correct.
Earlier on that page, the court says, your client is giving up her right to appeal any sentence she receives unless I sentence her to a period longer than 20 years or unless I depart upwards from the guideline range. Is that correct? Yes. Do you think you understand what that means? The defendant, yes. So she's already said, that's it. There are two unlesses.
I understand that.
Why is there reason for thinking those were illustrative rather than exhaustive grounds for appeal?
Because it would appear from that record that Ms. Guillen does understand the plea agreement. But the court then continues and explains further. The court injects the confusion into this situation and leaves the only logical conclusion Ms. Guillen could derive from that is that she does retain the right to appeal an illegal sentence. Let's not forget, the court began the plea hearing by saying you would always have the right to appeal any illegal sentence. Now, in getting into the details of the plea agreement is when the court begins to try to explain things, but for the court to conclude the discussion of the plea agreement, even though Ms. Guillen has already said, yes, I think I understand, conclude with an incorrect explanation after the court began with an incorrect statement, I think leaves only one conclusion to be drawn, and that's that Ms. Guillen understood that she still retained the right to appeal any illegal sentence.
Where's the agreement itself?
The agreement is in the appendix at page 18.
The agreement itself is clear, is it not?
The agreement itself, yes, is clear.
All right, so the agreement is clear. The court recites it correctly and clearly at 68 at the top of the page, but then restates it on the same page in a way that's ambiguous with respect to whether those two grounds are exclusive or illustrative.
That's correct. But I would remind the court that the district court began the plea hearing by saying you would always have the right to appeal any illegal sentence. The district court never disavows that statement to Ms. Guillen. It does not say, I was incorrect when I told you before that you would always have the right to appeal an illegal sentence. Instead, it offers a non-exhaustive list on grounds.
Well, but when the court says in the second passage on 68, when the court says, all right, I told you a while ago I could never give you, that you would always have the right to take an appeal if you thought my sentence was illegal. Okay, now, that can't be referring back to the top of the page. It's got to be referring back to the earlier column.
That's correct.
Right? And then comes the arguably ambiguous explanation.
Yes.
All right, so that's the relation back to the to try to correct any misimpression given before, maybe perhaps not successfully, perhaps, yes.
I would say that it supplements the explanation before rather than corrects, because there is no disavowal. There is no statement that would draw a layperson to understand that the right you just told me that I have, I no longer have. Instead, it is, I told you before about this right, and here are two examples.
If the waiver, if waivers of this sort are presumptively valid, then I would infer that that would mean that your burden here is somewhat greater than if we're just on a clean slate.
If,
in other words, because you're focusing on whether her waiver was knowing and intelligent, aren't you?
That's correct.
Yeah.
I'm not actually challenging right. the general validity
it's
of
an anterior
such waivers.
Question. Yeah.
So I would say the general validity has not been decided by this court, but we're not challenging that in any way. Even if an understanding of the waiver can be imputed to Ms. Guillen from the text of the plea agreement or from the inconsistent explanation that the court provided, the waiver was nevertheless not knowing and intelligent because it was based on additional information the court provided Ms. Guillen that the court would be permitted to presume the guidelines reasonable and the Court of Appeals would affirm a sentence where the district court had presumed the guidelines to be reasonable. So advising Ms. Guillen, assuming Ms. Guillen understood the waiver, the district court.
But in your brief, you do argue, in part, right, that the waiver couldn't be knowing because it was ex ante, anticipatory.
I do, but I would submit with regard to that argument, as the government points out, there every other circuit to address that has addressed it contrary to our position.
So you're not hopeful? You have raised the point.
I have raised the point to preserve it, Your Honor. With regard to the advice concerning the court's authority to presume the guidelines reasonable, which is precisely what Ms. Guillen is appealing now, when the court told Ms. Guillen that this Court of Appeals would essentially affirm a guideline sentence and that the district court itself was permitted to presume the guidelines reasonable, the court was essentially telling Ms. Guillen, with regard to the guidelines and my presumption that they're reasonable, you have virtually no hope of appealing. So to waive that right became less significant for Ms. Guillen. And in that sense, her waiver of that appellate right, if the court finds a waiver, was not knowing and intelligent because it was based on erroneous legal advice from the court. I see that I'm over my time.
Yeah. We'll give you a minute for rebuttal, Mr. Jackson.
May it please the court, Stratton Strand on behalf of the government. At the time of the plea proceeding, Ms. Guillen was 26 years old. She was very bright. She had a BA from a good college, and she'd excelled in school. Her experienced FPD attorney had negotiated this agreement on her behalf, and as my opponent has acknowledged, the appeal waiver provision in the agreement is itself pellucid. In the agreement, Ms. Guillen specifically attested that she'd read the agreement, that she discussed it with her attorney, and that she fully understood it. When it came to the plea colloquy itself, as Judge Ginsburg's questions have suggested, the court could not have been more clear in explaining paragraph 13, the specific waiver provision. Went through it with first her attorney and with her, and specifically described it accurately that your client is giving up her right to appeal any sentence she receives unless I sentence her to a period longer than 20 years or unless I depart upwards from the guideline range. Mr. Venegas confirmed that that was his understanding of the waiver. Ms. Guillen confirmed that she understood it as well. Had the second comment that the trial judge made, where she went back and explained what she had meant by a legal sentence earlier in the proceeding, had that actually raised any confusion in Ms. Guillen's mind, presumably either she or her attorney would have responded to the court's offer to give more information should there be any misunderstanding. The court asked her, do you have any other questions, particularly about sentencing? And she said, no, thank you. One more point. At the conclusion of the plea hearing, Judge Kessler did in fact make a specific factual determination that Ms. Guillen understood the terms of the appeal waiver. She said, I think the defendant is fully competent to make the decision and that she understands what she's doing and the consequences of it. There's nothing on this record to suggest that that finding by the trial court was clearly erroneous.
Where's that? Where's that finding?
That's the appendix, page 69, line 25 through...
So immediately after the colloquy we were discussing with Mr. Axon.
Correct, Your Honor. Finally, even if there had been any possible confusion about the possibility of appealing some type of illegal sentence, there cannot have been any confusion that Ms. Guillen could not appeal a within-guidelines sentence. She had specifically been told that there were two types of things that she could appeal. One of those was going above the guidelines range. Obviously, if she can only appeal above the guidelines range below, she's not going to be able to appeal that. As to the suggestion that the court gave Ms. Guillen invalid advice as to the nature of the guidelines and the weight they should be given, any possible information on that, we don't agree that the court actually misinformed her, but in any event, any advice about what effect the guidelines would have no effect on Ms. Guillen's understanding of the waiver at issue here, which was the waiver of the right to appeal. She acknowledged that she had a right to appeal the sentence and the manner in which it was imposed and derived. She acknowledged that she had that right, and she acknowledged that she was giving up that right. So she did know, in fact, that she would not be able to appeal the manner in which her sentence would be determined. So regardless of any error that the court might have made in describing the legal effect of the guidelines, Ms. Guillen understood she would not be able to appeal the manner in which that sentence was determined. Based on that, the waiver was knowing and voluntary and should be enforced, and this court should dismiss the appeal on that ground.
In your brief, you, pardon me, as I recall, you cited the First Circuit's opinion in Teeter, but I'm not finding it. It says 19 in the, well, here it is at the top of 19. In light of this guidance, the guidance being what? Supreme Court in Ruiz, I believe. It is not surprising that 11 other circuits have found appeal waivers to be generally valid despite the anticipatory nature of most such waivers. Do we have to get into that? You have to sign up with the other 11 or not today?
I believe that you do. The reason that this court did not sign up in the last two opportunities it had is because in those cases, the Simpson and the West cases, the In Re Sealed case and the West case, in one case, appellant had not contended that the appeal waiver was invalid, but had simply contended that her appeal did not fall within the scope of the waiver. And in the other case, appellant had given no reason that the appeal waiver should not be enforced. So this court was not called upon to determine whether waivers should be imposed.
Are we called upon to do so today?
And I believe we are, because in this case, appellant has specifically argued that the appeal waiver should not be enforced because it was not knowing and voluntary. If this court finds that the waiver was knowing and voluntary, presumably to enforce the waiver, it would have to determine that waivers generally are enforceable if made knowing and voluntarily.
Does that follow? If we first say it was knowing and voluntary, why do you need the benefit of a presumption? What is the next step if we say yes, it was knowing and voluntary?
Then it's enforced as long as this court agrees that appeal waivers generally are enforceable if made knowingly and voluntarily.
Wait a minute. That's the question: whether we need to say that generally, or whether it's there's in this case, if it was made knowing and intelligently, whether there's any reason not to enforce it. Do you require the benefit of a presumption in order to get a resolution of that?
No, Your Honor. No. It would provide guidance in this circuit that would be helpful, but it's not necessary to decide the case in our favor.
Okay. Anything else? Questions?
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Schenker.
I would just reiterate that the district court's explanation to Ms. Guillen was not clear, and the record will speak for itself. The district court advised Ms. Guillen that she would be able to appeal any illegal sentence, and that if the court imposed a sentence within the guideline range, it would not be illegal. Those are two separate statements, and neither statement was entirely accurate. It's correct that the district court considered many of the 3553 factors in arriving at Ms. Guillen's sentence, but ultimately, because Ms. Guillen failed to overcome a presumption of guideline reasonableness, the district court imposed the guideline sentence. It's difficult to argue that Ms. Guillen's waiver was knowing and intelligent if it was based on a belief that she had virtually no right to challenge a guideline sentence. Rita Gall have spoken clearly to district courts that they are not to use a presumption of reasonableness when imposing sentence. The district court did that here, but it's important in this case to understand why the advice to Ms. Guillen that she would not be able to appeal that at the time of the plea impacted her understanding of, even if the court were to find that she agreed to the waiver, it impacted her understanding of that waiver because logically she would feel, I'm not giving anything up. The court has said that guideline sentences are presumed reasonable. The court has said the Court of Appeals will affirm a guideline sentence. Therefore, if I am waiving rights, waiving the right to challenge a guideline sentence is insignificant to me. If that was the reasoning, and that's the only reasoning that can be drawn from this record, that waiver, the waiver of the precise ability to challenge what she is challenging now, presumptive use of the guidelines, was not knowing and intelligent. And we'd ask the court not to enforce the waiver provision with regard to that issue in this case and remand this case for resentencing. As this circuit has ruled, resentencings require a smaller expenditure of resources than other types of appeals. Ms. Guillen is simply asking for a sentence that is consistent with the mandate of the Supreme Court in Booker,
you're
Gall.
You're thinking of Cerro, I think, right?
That is correct.
Yeah. Any further questions? Thank you, Mr. Exum. Mr. Strand, thank you. Case is submitted.